Like someone left a false trail? Exactly. Cooper and Evers both agree it feels like it has their father's fingerprints all over it. I dropped my head in frustration. Shit, I said. If Maxwell Sinclair hid the baby, we're screwed. They're all on it, Aiden said. Cooper, Evers, Knox, even Axel. They're taking it personally, not that they weren't before. They're going to find him, it's just a matter of time. Is it possible we're stirring things up by looking into it? I asked. Anything's possible, Aiden said. We have to keep looking, I said, stating the obvious. We'd lost enough family as it was. If there was another one of us out there, we had to track him down. Agreed. I'm leaving this morning for a business trip, Aiden said, changing the subject. I won't be back until Sunday evening. I'm sure you won't need anything, but if anything happens, call Cooper. I stared at him, his words leaving me speechless. If anything happened, he wanted me to call Cooper Sinclair and not him. Hard not to see that as a slap across the face. But worse, he was leaving. The next day was the anniversary of his parents' murder, and he was leaving? You're leaving on a business trip? Through the weekend? I couldn't quite bring myself to call him out, but Aiden knew what I was getting at. He turned away, not meeting my eyes, and went back to straightening the papers on his desk. Is that a problem? He asked, in his iciest voice. No. Fine. Whatever. What was I supposed to say? Yes. It's a big fucking problem. It's the first year I've been home on the anniversary since they died, and you're fucking taking off. Was this betrayal and abandonment the way Aiden had felt when I left? I should be over it by now. 13 years had passed since my aunt and uncle had died. More than enough time to process everything. Their deaths, the part I'd played. I thought I was past it. Being home, surrounded by memories of my parents and Aiden's, I knew I wasn't even close. I wasn't going to argue with Aiden about his travel plans. Instead, I decided to take a shot at mending the rift between us. Are we ever going to talk about it? I asked, trying to keep my voice level, though I couldn't help the thread of challenge that wound through my words. Aiden's eyes flashed with anger, and maybe something else. Maybe hurt, before he said. There's nothing to talk about, Gage. You left, now you're home. I resisted the urge to be a smartass and said, If there's nothing to talk about, then why do you keep shutting me out? I know I shouldn't have left. I know I walked out on all of you, and it was a shitty thing to do. Looking carefully over my shoulder, at me but not meeting my eyes, Aiden said, Water under the bridge. It's been a long time, no need to talk about it now. I think we do. We used to be friends, Aiden. Now you'll barely look at me. Aiden picked up a pen and drew a stack of papers in front of him. He couldn't have been more clear about wanting me to leave if he'd walked me to the door himself. I knew how to take a hint, but I was also good at ignoring them when I wanted to. I stayed where I was, sitting in the chair across from his desk, and stared him down. Finally, he said, I don't know what you want from me, Gage. We're not kids anymore. You left. My parents were dead, the kids were crying themselves to sleep at night, and no one knew what the fuck was going on, and you just disappeared. Fine. I get it. I got it back then. You felt too guilty to stay, and you had to get out of this house. I understand. But it doesn't change the fact that you've been gone over a decade. Coming home for a few days here and there doesn't make up for that, and you can't just move back in and think it's all going to go back to how it was. Aiden always knew how to hit where it hurt. He was right. About everything. After the night Uncle Hugh and Aunt Olivia were murdered, I'd been steeped in guilt, drowning in it. I couldn't face my family. I couldn't face myself. I'd left to escape, to spare them the sight of me, the reminder that I'd let them die. I wondered if it would be better if I were gone. My stomach turned over, my breakfast curdling in a wave of nausea. I didn't want to leave again. I wanted to be here, in Winter's house. I wanted my family back. I stood. Talking to Aiden wasn't getting me anywhere. He wasn't ready to give me a chance, and I couldn't force him to. Maybe we'd be better off if we just avoided each other for a while. "I'll let you get back to work then," I said. I thought Aiden was going to ignore my retreat, but he looked up and met my eyes, his own deadly serious. "I meant what I said. Stay away from Sophie." I gave him a sharp nod, turned on my heel, and left, closing the door behind me. A lot of things about being back in this house reminded me of the days when Aiden and I had been tighter than brothers, but nothing so much as the overwhelming desire to slam my fist into his face. Most of the time, we'd gotten along in an almost scary synchronicity, knowing what the other was thinking before he had to speak. That didn't mean we didn't fight. We fought over big stuff, over stupid shit. When we were 7 and when we were 17, Aiden and I had been responsible for our share of bloodied noses and bruised knuckles. I missed the relief of solving our disagreements with our fists. These days, our problems couldn't be solved with something as straightforward as a fist fight. Aiden still blamed me for his parents' deaths, and I couldn't do a thing about it. Worse, I was starting to think that he was interested in Sophie, which, in a way, was a much bigger problem. Hugh and Olivia's murders were in the past. Sophie was here and now. Aiden had talked a big game about staying away from a woman working in our home, but the way he'd said it, I couldn't stop wondering. Hearing them laugh together, seeing the smile on his face freeze as I opened the door to his office, Aiden wasn't a big smiler. It couldn't have been innocent. I was sure it was on Sophie's part. But Aiden? Was Aiden warning me away from Sophie so he could have his own shot with her? She wasn't exactly his type, with her practical clothes and neatly braided hair. Aiden went for glamour. But Sophie. Sophie was naturally beautiful. She didn't need a ton of makeup and a couture wardrobe to highlight her assets. I didn't want to think about what a bombshell she would be if she bothered with all of that. I could barely keep my hands off her as it was. If she was irresistible in a floor-length nightgown and thick cotton robe, I couldn't imagine how I would stay away if she started flashing cleavage and left her hair down. My mind raced over the problem of Aiden and Sophie. She'd been living here 6 months. Maybe Aiden had seen her dressed up and realized she was his kind of woman. Maybe he was taking his time in his courtship. I knew he hadn't kissed her. I couldn't believe he'd touched Sophie the way I had. She'd responded like a woman who hadn't been kissed in years. If Aiden had managed to get his mouth on Sophie, he wouldn't have let her go. If we hadn't heard that sound in the library, I wouldn't have either. I'd almost fucked her right there in the kitchen, so drawn in by the feel of her in my arms, her mouth under mine, that I hadn't cared where we were. I needed to see her again. I thought about hunting down Sophie and Aunt Amelia, and just as quickly rejected the idea. Amelia had sharp eyes, and I didn't want her to see my interest in Sophie. She'd either get in my way if she disapproved, or, possibly worse, try to help. I didn't need Amelia's help with Sophie. I needed to get my shit together. As pissed as I was after that conversation with Aiden, he had a point. I wasn't dependable. I wanted to be. I had been, for years. Any one of the guys on my team would have beaten the shit out of my cousin for calling me undependable. I understand why my family might see me that way, but I'd spent the last 13 years in the Army defining the concept of dependable. I always followed through, though. Always completed the mission, and I never left one of my guys behind. Fuck. The insurgents who'd grabbed me in the desert miles from our base only got me because I was buying time for my team to finish the mission and get clear. When you went to the heart of it, Aiden was wrong. I was dependable. I was loyal. And I would fight for the people I loved. But in another way, he was right. I didn't have a job. I still wasn't sleeping. I was plagued by nightmares. Loud noises set my heart racing and left me fighting the urge to dive for cover. I was too quick to anger, and I couldn't control my emotions. Gage Winters was dependable and steadfast. But sometime during my 6 months of captivity, I'd lost touch with that Gage Winters, and I hadn't quite found my way back. Sophie deserved better. Not Aiden. He couldn't have her. He was too stiff and formal for Sophie. I didn't see her wanting life as a society wife. She'd want a home and children and affection. I didn't know if I was the man to give her that. But I knew I wanted to find out.
Chapter 11. Sophie. I should have stayed in bed. The night before, I'd been smart. Instead of roaming Winter's house when I couldn't sleep and risking a run-in with Gage, I'd curled up in the window seat in my bedroom and stared out into the dark night. Things had gotten out of control with Gage in the kitchen. I couldn't afford to let it happen again. Just the memory of his mouth on mine, the feel of his hands on my skin, and I was wet. No man had ever had this effect on me. One minute I was admiring his eyes, or the stretch of his shirt over his shoulders, and the next, I was dizzy with lust, willing to risk everything for just one more minute with him. Stupid. I knew better. I loved my job. Getting involved with Gage was a complication that could drive me from the only home I'd had in years. I'd decided to do the only responsible, mature thing. I was avoiding him. I hadn't seen him since he'd interrupted my meeting with Aiden. He hadn't come to lunch or dinner for 2 days, staying closeted in his room. I knew I shouldn't, but I couldn't help worrying about him. A somber mood hung over the house, infecting everyone. Amelia, Mrs. W., even Abel seemed subdued. When I asked Mrs. W. about it, she explained that it was the anniversary of Hugh and Olivia Winter's murder. When Charlie still lived in the house, she'd told me, Aiden would come up with a business trip that required both of them to leave town until the anniversary had passed. Even when the children had still been young, Mrs. W. said Aiden had emptied the house every year rather than face the memory of the night his parents had been killed. She said she wasn't surprised he'd left again this year, only that he hadn't taken Gage with him. Pouring myself a cup of tea, I'd said, "They don't seem to get along very well." Mrs. W. rarely gossiped about the Winters family. She was loyal to the core, and loved them like they were her own. So I was surprised when she said, with a shake of her head, "Those boys! They were tight as ticks when they were young. But after Gage left and Aiden had so much on his shoulders..." She trailed off. Briskly assembling a snack plate for Aunt Amelia, she went on, "They'll work it out. They just need some time. But I don't like Gage on his own. Not tonight." She slanted me a look I couldn't read. No one in the house knew that Gage and I had met in the middle of the night more than once. As far as everyone else was concerned, we were strangers, sharing a few meals at the dinner table, and no more. But the way Mrs. W. looked at me, the suggestion I thought I saw in her eyes? Did she know? Sometimes it seemed like Mrs. W. knew everything that happened in Winter's house. Maybe she did. I couldn't get her words out of my mind. I'd managed to fall asleep when I tucked myself into bed, but I'd woken not long after midnight from a nightmare of grasping hands and swinging fists. Like most of my bad dreams, this one took place in the dark. My memories of Anthony belonged in the dark. Still half asleep, fighting my way out of the dream, I rolled over and flicked on the light. One day I would sleep through the night. But it wouldn't be tonight. I got out of bed and pulled on my robe. For the first time in ages, I wished I had something a little more feminine. The waffle weave white cotton was clean and crisp, attractive in its own way. Attractive, but not at all feminine. Not sexy. When did I start worrying about being sexy? Since Anthony, I'd done my best to downplay my more attractive features and focus on my skills over my looks. Not that I was a raving beauty or anything, but between the almost platinum shade of my hair and a curvy figure men seemed to like, I drew attention. I'd never be a supermodel or a movie star, but since I'd hit adolescence, my looks had attracted men. I'd always been a little too shy to make the most of it, and after Anthony I had no interest in any kind of attention, especially attention based on the way I looked. That could only get me in trouble. I definitely shouldn't wish I had a different nightgown. I looked down at the thin white cotton trimmed in lace and shook my head. I dressed like someone's maiden aunt. After years in the thick flannel chin-to-toes nightwear Anthony gave me, the light thin cotton felt like freedom. I wasn't ready for anything more skin-bearing. This nightgown was sleeveless, and that was enough to make me feel daring and exposed. I tried not to remember the negligee I'd chosen for my wedding night. I hadn't worn anything like it since. I'd thought about it, mostly wondering if I should replace my white cotton with silk and satin, reclaim some of what Anthony had stolen from me. In theory, it was a great idea, but when I looked at those filmy negligees in the department store, I shuddered with memory. White cotton would have to do. I paced my room for a few minutes, caught in an argument with myself. I wanted a cup of tea. Hiding in my room when I couldn't sleep only made it worse, gave me a sense of being trapped, of hiding, that I hated. I didn't want to risk running into Gage. Avoiding him seemed like the most sensible move. But I was worried after talking to Mrs. W. He was having enough trouble adjusting to being home. I knew there was no way he was asleep that night of all nights, the anniversary of his aunt and uncle's death. I was leaving my room before I'd consciously made the decision. Heading down the hall, I saw the flicker of firelight in the library and thought about making tea. 2 cups, one for each of us. In the dark, I could sneak by the library without being seen. Winter's house was built on a large square, the courtyard in the center. My room and Amelia's were on the front right corner, closest to the driveway and inner gate. The library and Aiden's office were in the back right, the kitchen opposite in the back left. Most of the rooms opened right into the hallway, but the doors to the library, Aiden's office, and the wine room were tucked into a separate small hallway, shielding both rooms from anyone passing by. I could easily sneak past the library without being caught. There was no reason to poke my head in before I went to make tea. I was through the doorway before I decided I wasn't going in. I didn't have time to be annoyed at my indecisiveness, or the way I kept acting against my best interests. The moment my eyes fell on him, Gage commanded all of my attention. He was sprawled on the leather couch, his feet propped on the coffee table, a crystal decanter of whiskey beside them. A half-full cut crystal glass in his hand. I'd never seen Gage drink before. Not like this. His eyes were glazed, his limbs loose. When he caught sight of me, the side of his mouth curled in a sardonic smile. The clarity of his speech took me by surprise. Based on the way he looked, I would have expected him to be slurring his words. Instead, each word was perfectly clear when he said, "Sophie, my angel come to rescue me in the dark." His voice was a growl. Shivers skated down my skin, prickling my nerves from the back of my neck to the bottom of my feet, waking every part of my body. I didn't move from my spot just inside the doorway, my eyes locked on his. When he kept speaking, I swayed forward just a little, mesmerized by the low rumble of his voice. "The first time I saw you, I thought you were an angel. That hair, those eyes, the white robe. I figured it was the end. Coming home was a dream, and you were here to take me with you. Then I heard your voice, and I knew you were no angel. No angel could have a voice like yours. So sweet." "Are you drunk?" I asked, and wished I'd kept my mouth shut when he threw back the rest of the whiskey in his glass. He refilled it, his movements precise and controlled. The brown liquor poured cleanly into the crystal glass, the stopper sliding easily into the decanter without a clink. His hands were steady, and the way he was speaking clear enough, but the glaze in his blue eyes and the things he was saying. Gage Winters was not sober. In answer to my question, he shook his head.
"Not yet, Angel, but I'm working on it. Come keep me company."
I stayed where I was, shoving my hands in the pockets of my robe. I held my arms tight to my side and said, "I don't think that's a very good idea. I shouldn't have let you... We shouldn't have..." In the kitchen the other day, I... My mouth snapped shut, and I fell silent. Gage took a sip of his whiskey, studying me with hooded eyes. I tried to look away, but I couldn't stop staring at his face. I'd rarely seen him so relaxed. Even knowing it was the alcohol easing his tension, Gage became even more magnetic when he wasn't wound tight. If it hadn't been for the sadness in his eyes, I might have thought it was a good thing. But the sadness was there, clinging to him, weighing him down, and he was only relaxed because he was drinking. I knew he avoided alcohol for exactly this reason. "Do you want me to apologize for kissing you?" he asked, his eyes fixed on my mouth. Before I could answer, he said, "Because I'm not going to. Kissing you might be the best decision I've made in the last 13 years, and I'm not apologizing for it."
"I don't want an apology," I said honestly. "I just don't think we should do it again."
"We'll have to agree to disagree on that, Angel. Come have a drink with me. It'll help you sleep."
I took another step into the library before I drew short. His voice was wrapping itself around me, cajoling and tempting. How could something so soothing feel so dangerous? I tried to tell myself to turn around and go back to my room. I didn't listen. I didn't want to go back to my lonely room and stare at the ceiling until the sun rose. I wanted to be here, with Gage. I cut that thought off before I could finish it. I wasn't in a position to want anything with Gage. For so long, I'd had a single focus in life. First, it was to get through college and nursing school so I could get a job and support myself. Then it was surviving marriage to Anthony. Then I was free, and my life was all about finding work and moving forward. Until the day Gage came home to Winter's house. From the moment we'd met, my focus had split. A part of me still thought my job and my future should be my most important priority. That part of me was practical, sensible. Before Gage, I'd never wanted anything more than security. Now there was a new Sophie, the Sophie that had kissed Gage in the kitchen, the Sophie who wanted to curl up next to him on that couch, take a long sip of his whiskey, and kiss him again. That Sophie didn't give a crap about her job or security. That Sophie was tired of sleepless nights and bad dreams and feeling like she was dead inside. The new Sophie wanted to be alive. She wanted to dream. She wanted to want. I hovered there, one step into the room, my arms crossed tightly over my chest, and watched Gage lift the glass to his lips. He took a slow, long sip of the whiskey. "Sensible Sophie!" yelled at me as my feet carried me across the room.
I ignored her. Gage's eyes flared as I moved to the opposite side of the couch and sat, tucking my feet beneath me and leaning against the arm. With Gage sprawled against the opposite arm, a good 3 feet separated us. Leaning forward, he filled a second glass with a small splash of whiskey and handed it to me. I took it, thrilling more than I should have when his fingers stroked the back of my hand before withdrawing. I took a sip of the whiskey and coughed. I didn't like whiskey. The sour fire of it burned my throat. I didn't really like alcohol in general, but if I was going to stay up half the night drinking, whiskey would never be my first choice. I wasn't here for the whiskey. I was here for Gage. Chapter 12. Sophie. Deciding not to play games, I said, Mrs. W. told me why Aiden left, told me what today is. I'm sorry. Gage's eyes dropped to the whiskey in his hand. He swirled the glass and took a sip.
This is the first year I've been home on the anniversary since it happened.
Was it easier, being away? I asked.
I would have told you no, but now that I'm here, yeah, being away was easier. I found them right here, you know.
He gestured to the Persian rug with his whiskey glass,
right there on the rug.
You were home? I asked. I don't know why I thought no one was home when Hugh and Olivia Winters were murdered. I didn't know much about the crime. I hadn't lived in the area when it had happened, and it felt creepy to spy on my new employers by reading all the media coverage. A simple web search had uncovered pages of headlines, clickbait, and trashy. I hadn't read a single one. Seeing the haunted guilt in Gage's blue eyes, I was glad I hadn't.
I was home,
he said in a distant voice. I was here the whole time,
and I didn't save them. Just walked in and found them laying on the floor, exactly the same way my parents died. Almost the same position on the rug, same room, different house.
I didn't know what to say. I didn't know a lot about the Winters' tragic history, but I did know Gage's parents had died when he was a child, in their own home a quarter mile away. And I'd known those deaths had been called a murder-suicide by the police, just like Hugh and Olivia Winters' murders had been. The headlines I'd seen had fed on that angle, but Gage hadn't said.
I didn't stop them,
he'd said.
I didn't save them.
I turned the problem over in my mind, wanting to ask what he meant and afraid to make it all worse. Had they been murdered and he'd been home? It suddenly occurred to me how narrowly the teenage Gage might have escaped being killed himself. I watched him drain half the whiskey in his glass, tipping his head back as it ran down his throat, and staring at the ceiling, shrouded in the darkness of the room. The flickering light of the fire gilded his skin, turning his tan to gold, and setting flames into his blue eyes. He was almost impossibly beautiful in his own rugged way. When my eyes caught on the curve of his lower lip, I looked away and took my own long sip of whiskey, fighting back the urge to cough and choke as it burned its way to my stomach. I expected Gage to say something else about his aunt and uncle, the anniversary, but his next words almost sent me fleeing the room.
You were married,
he said flatly.
What happened with your husband?
I took another sip of the whiskey to cover my reluctance to answer. I never talked about my marriage with anyone. I'd only told Amelia a little. His dark rumble of a voice, carefully gentle, Gage said,
It was that bad.
I don't talk about it, I admitted, and I don't want to talk about it now.
Fair enough,
Gage said.
I don't want to talk either.
In a fluid movement, too graceful for a man who'd been drinking whiskey all night, Gage surged forward and pulled the half-empty crystal glass from my hand. Before I could move out of reach, he closed his hand around my arm and tugged me forward. It happened so fast, I lost my balance and fell into him. I started to struggle, to fight my way free when his arms closed around me and he pulled me into his side, pressing my head to his chest.
Settle down, Angel. I'm not going to do anything you don't want me to. I swear. I'll never hurt you. I just want to hold on to you for a few minutes. Just let me hold on to you.
I went still in his arms, confused. The second the fight went out of me, Gage settled me into his side, smoothing my robe down over my legs and wrapping his arm around my back. His heart beat under my ear. His solid body was warm against mine, smelling of whiskey. And man, I felt his breath against the top of my head, his lips in my hair as he murmured, "I just want to hold on to you for a little while." The tight knot in my chest unfurled, and I melted into him, letting my legs twine with his and laying my arm across his chest. Bit by bit, I relaxed, my body molding to his, my eyes sliding shut. I don't know how long we lay there. A while. Long enough for me to get comfortable. So comfortable I never realized I'd shifted the arm I had across his chest and was exploring his body in lazy strokes, my fingers sliding over his shoulders, tracing his collarbone, dipping into the ridges of muscle at his abdomen. I was lost in my own head, warm and safe, my hands on Gage as if he were mine, as if I had license to do whatever I wanted with him. Gradually, I realized that his breath had shortened. His heartbeat had sped up. My hand stilled on the side of his neck, and his voice rumbled against my palm when he said, "Don't stop. I won't do anything if you don't want me to. Just don't stop." I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to stop. I wanted to keep touching him. I wanted to dive my fingers under his shirt and feel the heat of his skin on mine. I wanted more of Gage, and I didn't want to worry about the consequences. So many wants, and all of them were foolish. I knew I should get up and leave. I didn't move. I lay there, completely still, my hand curled around the side of Gage's neck, silently arguing with myself. I might have been there forever if Gage hadn't slid his fingers around my chin and urged my head up, his eyes searching for mine. I shifted over him, maybe trying to get off the couch, away from temptation. But as I moved my body over Gage's, his hands closed on my hips, holding me on top of him. I was slow to react. I lay there, straddling Gage Winters, thinking that this was the exact opposite of what I'd intended. I was supposed to be climbing over him, off the couch, and scurrying out the door, away from temptation, away from trouble. Gage's fingers sank into my hips, but I could have moved easily enough if I'd really wanted to. I didn't want to move. I knew what I wanted. Ignoring all my doubts, I leaned down and touched my lips to his. Gage froze beneath me, his muscles tight with tension as I brushed my lips against his. Sinking my fingers into his thick hair, I did it again, slower, flicking out my tongue to taste the full lower lip that always drew my eye. I couldn't resist sucking it into my mouth, opening him to me, fitting my lips against his, and tasting him. My tongue touched his, and Gage came back to life, his hips rolling beneath mine, his erection hard against my heat. His need was unleashed in his kiss, his mouth taking control, taking everything it wanted. I fell into the kiss, forgetting that just moments before I'd been ready to flee the room. Yanking at the voluminous fabric of my rope and nightgown, Gage went for the bare skin beneath, stroking his hands from my knees to my hips and up my sides, my breath caught in my throat as his big, rough hands closed over my breasts. Gage broke our kiss, his head falling back as he groaned, "Fuck, Sophie." My lips met his again, and his kiss was hungry, demanding. When one hand traced down my spine to dip between my legs, I settled back into him, my knees spreading wider, my hips tilting up. I was wanton, as hungry, as needy as he was. He plucked at my nipple, sending shocks of sharp, sweet pleasure through me. One thick finger delved into the heat between my legs, carefully, patiently opening my body to him. I panted into his mouth, overcome with sensation. Too much and not enough. A second finger joined the first, and I let out a low cry, tearing my mouth from his and dropping my forehead against his neck, panting, and rocking back into his hand, undone by the pleasure. Two fingers pumped deep in my pussy, a hard callous thumb pressed into my clit, and I let out a keening wail, gasping for breath. I think I called his name. My cheeks were wet with tears or perspiration. I didn't know. I didn't know anything. Just Gage's hand between my legs, his fingers teasing my nipple, his strong, solid body supporting my weight as I shuddered and wept through a wave of pleasure, unlike anything I'd ever known before. Afterward, I was shaking, tiny shocks of bliss echoing through my body, a heavenly ache pulsing between my legs. I was aware of Gage withdrawing his fingers, smoothing down my nightgown and robe, as he arranged my legs beside his. I couldn't help but notice the long, thick bar of his erection straining the front of his pants. I wanted to touch him, to see what he felt like in my hand, to make him feel the way he'd made me feel, so good, so alive. I reached for him, and Gage's hand closed over mine, leading it to his chest. I propped myself up on one elbow and looked down at him in confusion. "Don't you want me to?" Not releasing my hand from his, he sat up a little and kissed me gently, skating his lips along my jaw and nipping my earlobe. "Angel, you have no idea how much I want you to."
"I want to touch you," I said, ignoring the blush I could feel in my cheeks.
"I want you to, but not yet. Not tonight."
"Why?" I asked, searching his eyes, trying to understand.
"You gave me a gift, Sophie. You trusted me to make you feel good."
Seeming to change the subject, he said,
"I love the sound of your voice when you talk, so low and sweet. It soothes all the jagged parts inside me. Did you know that? But the sounds you make when you come, fuck, Angel. I could listen to that for the rest of my life. It almost makes me feel whole again."
"Then why?"
"We're not ready for that. I'm a fucked up mess, Sophie. You deserve better. And if you let me get inside that sweet angel's body of yours, I'm not going to be able to let you go. Do you understand?"
"You're protecting me? From you?"
"I promised I'd keep you safe,"
he said in answer. Gage sat up, bringing me with him, and stood, pulling me to my feet. My legs were shockingly wobbly. I realized he planned to walk me to my room. I knew he was going to leave me there, alone. If I were alone, he'd be alone too. "Are you going to sleep tonight?" I asked. Gage scanned the library, his eyes bleak. He shrugged. That meant, no. Pulling my hand from his, I said, "I'm not leaving you. We can play cards, watch a movie, something. But I'm not leaving you."
"Angel,"
he started. I planted my hands on my hips, keeping my eyes on his. I wasn't very big and I wasn't loud, but I was stubborn as hell. Gage's tight shoulders dropped in resignation.
"Fine."
We stood there for a full minute, in silence, watching each other. Gage seemed to come to a decision, because he took my hand and led me back to the couch. Turning on a speaker in the bookshelves I hadn't noticed, he put music on low. Big band. The old stuff. Gage spread out on the long couch and pulled me into his arms, tucking me securely between his big body and the back of the couch. My head on his chest, his fingers combed through my hair as the flames of the fire flickered across the room, and the lively tones of the music drifted to our ears.
"My Uncle Hugh and Aunt Olivia loved this music. I used to walk in on them dancing together."
He fell silent, his fingers tugging gently through my hair, lulling me to sleep. Letting out a long breath, he relaxed beneath me. I stretched my arm over his chest, my hand on his side as if I could hold him to me, as if I could keep him safe from the demons in his memories. I couldn't change his past. I couldn't heal his wounds. All I could do was hold him close to my heart and hope it was enough.
Chapter 13. Sophie. My head pounded in fatigue the next morning. I dozed on the couch with Gage for a few hours, drifting between talking and sleeping. Long before dawn lit the sky, Gage had helped me to my feet, clicked off the fire and the music, and walked me to my room. He left me at the door, pressing a tender, lingering kiss to my mouth, saying only, "Thank you, Angel." I'd crawled into my bed and tried to go back to sleep, but sleep refused to come. I couldn't stop thinking about Gage. I tried not to compare him to Anthony, but it was impossible. For one thing, they were the only two men who'd ever really touched me, sexually. If you added up every single episode of sexual contact in my marriage with Anthony, the total wouldn't come close to that explosive encounter on the couch with Gage. I thought I'd understood what an orgasm was, thought I'd given them to myself, alone in my bed in the dark of night. I'd had no clue. That kind of pleasure. It was distracting and seductive. Gage was nothing like Anthony. They had surface things in common. Anthony had been wealthy, so was Gage, though on a different level. They were both physically fit and attractive, though, again, in different ways. Anthony had been refined, elegant. More like Aiden, actually. There was a rough earthiness to Gage that I found reassuring. Maybe it was because Anthony and Aiden, men with that type of refined elegance, reminded me of my father. My cool, restrained father, who had had only enough warmth in his heart for one woman. My mother. When she'd died, he'd buried himself in his job. He'd told me not to marry Anthony, and when I hadn't listened, he cut me off. I'd managed to call him twice during my marriage, hoping he might offer a lifeline, but he'd told me calmly that I'd made my bed and I'd have to sleep in it. Literally. I hadn't seen him in 5 years. I didn't think I could be attracted to a man who reminded me of my father or Anthony. I trusted Aiden as an employer, and I could appreciate his good looks, but they didn't do anything for me. There was something about Gage I couldn't shake off. He was raw and honest, and purely himself. His control the night before had been intense, not like Anthony. Another superficial thing they had in common that was completely different under the surface. Anthony had lived for control. Everything about him was a way to control others. The charming facade he presented to the world, the way he locked down every emotion except those he wanted to show. When the ugly parts bubbled to the surface in a fit of violent rage, he'd still had enough control to save it all for me. In the moment he'd released enough of that rage through his fists, or his belt, or his kicking feet, the facade snapped back into place. Anthony used self-control as a shield and a weapon. Even in his worst attacks on me, he'd been in control. He never left a bruise I couldn't cover with clothing. He never broke a bone. He bruised my kidneys once or twice badly enough that there'd been blood in my urine. But otherwise, I had no lasting damage. If he'd injured me, I might have had to get medical attention, and that would reveal the truth of our marriage. Worse yet, a broken bone or internal bleeding would have required that I go to the hospital, and Anthony refused to allow me to leave the property. More of his obsession with control. Sometimes I thought he'd married me so he could exert his will over another human being in every possible way. After Anthony, I should have hated being near a man with that same iron control. But Gage didn't use control as a weapon. It was a part of his strength. He used it to protect the people around him. The night before, dazed with pleasure and shaking in his arms, I would have given him anything he asked. Never mind that he was right. I wasn't ready. I wasn't sure how I felt about Gage making that decision for me, but I'd felt the steely heat of his erection. If I hadn't touched him, I never would have known how much he wanted me. I wouldn't have understood what it took for him to hold back, to give me so much pleasure, and take none in return. Anthony had used his control to bring me a nightmare of pain. Gage used control to keep me safe, even from himself.
"You need another cup of coffee,"
Amelia said from across the table. I sent her a weak smile, and she said,
"You didn't sleep well again, did you?"
"No, not really." I didn't volunteer the exact nature of my not sleeping. Amelia was endlessly nosy and interfering. I didn't want to think about what she might do if she'd found out I'd spent the night with Gage. The possibilities were horrifying.
"Are you sure you don't want to try that tea again?"
she asked. I shuddered. I couldn't help it. The memory of the tea was that awful. I took a sip of coffee just to wash the thought of it away. "I'll make a deal with you, Amelia," I said. "I'll drink another cup of that tea right after you drink two of them."
"Why two?"
"Because you have more than enough grit to force yourself to drink one cup of that stuff. But two cups is an entirely different story. You'd never make it through two cups. No human being would voluntarily drink two cups of that tea."
"That bad, huh?"
Amelia winked at me, and I scowled back.
"I'll find something else. Something that doesn't taste so terrible."
"It's okay. I'm used to it by now," I said. Getting up from the table, I went to the buffet on the sideboard and took a few more pieces of bacon and another serving of eggs. With Aiden still out of town, there were only three of us eating regular meals at Winter's house, but that didn't stop Abel from putting out a full spread every morning.
"You shouldn't be used to it," Amelia said. "You're a nurse. You know a good night's sleep is important. Going day after day without sleeping is terrible. It's inhuman."
"You only think so because you're part sloth," I said dryly. Sometimes I thought she was. I envied Amelia her close relationship with sleep. She went to bed early and slept until 8 in the morning, sometimes getting as much as 10 hours a night. It wasn't unknown for her to doze off in the middle of the afternoon. She wasn't fatigued. She just loved to sleep. Normally, as people age, their need for sleep lessened, and Amelia had admitted she could get by on a lot less. She just didn't want to. Some nights, when I was laying in bed staring at the ceiling, I thought I would have killed to be able to sleep like that.
"Maybe you need to find a therapist and talk about your nightmares," she said quietly. "Or exercise. Exercise is supposed to be great for helping you sleep."
"Unfortunately, I have an allergy to exercise," I said with a straight face. "Every time I do it, I start sweating and get short of breath. It's terrible. I have to sit down until it goes away." Amelia rolled her eyes at me.
"We should walk more," she said decisively. "We've been staying in too much since the weather turned cold. We should put on our jackets and go back to our regular walk in the gardens."
I didn't mind walking. Walking wasn't real exercise, not the way we did it. In warmer weather, Amelia and I had gone to the botanical gardens a few times a week. The paths were wide and paved, perfect for Amelia, who could walk for hours but wasn't up for the grade changes and unstable terrain of hiking. Both the botanical gardens and Piedmont Park, where they were located, were scenic and interesting. "We could do that," I agreed. Amelia looked out the windows of the dining room to the gray drizzle outside.
"Not today," she said. "When is the weather supposed to clear up?"
I pulled my phone from my pocket and opened the weather app. "Partly cloudy with some sun in the afternoon tomorrow," I said.
"We'll go tomorrow, then. Today we might as well finish those birdseed things for Charlie's wedding."
I raised an eyebrow at Amelia. "Don't you mean I should finish the birdseed things? I don't remember you helping." Amelia shrugged one shoulder and grinned at me.
digging her fork into her scrambled eggs. I helped organize the ribbons, she offered before scooping eggs into her mouth. Amelia's irrepressible sense of mischief was one of the many things I loved about working for her. She really didn't need a nurse, and by taking this job, I knew I was letting my skills atrophy. The little real nursing I did was isolated to monitoring her blood sugar, her blood pressure, and overseeing her diet. But I was happy here, and I couldn't deny Aiden paid me well, especially considering room and board were included in the deal. When I decided to leave Winter's house, I'd have more than enough saved to cover any retraining I needed. I got the second cup of coffee Amelia had recommended and waited for her to finish her breakfast. She tried to talk me into letting her have a muffin. I reminded her muffins were just cake with no frosting. She glared at me, and I laughed. We went through some version of the same conversation every morning, and it always made me smile. I headed for the living room, where I'd left my box of materials for Charlie's birdseed favors. Amelia didn't follow me in. Continuing down the hall, she said over her shoulder, I want the library today. The living room looks cold. It wasn't cold, and it had a fireplace, but I knew what she meant. The living room was a bright, light-filled space, with high ceilings, pale walls, and tall windows. In contrast, the library was paneled in dark wood, with heavy curtains and a bigger fireplace. The couch and armchairs all had blankets folded over the arms. The living room was formal. Every room in Winter's house was formal. But the living room always made me feel like I should change into a cocktail dress. The library invited me to stay, to curl up with a book, and settle in. It had been one of my favorite rooms in the heat of summer, the dark paneling and thick drapes giving off the feel of a cave, cool and dry. So unlike the heavy humidity that blanketed Atlanta that time of year. I'd expected to find the room too cold once winter came, but it was the opposite. The dark paneling and thick drapes made it cozy, and the bigger fire threw off warmth that turned the room into a haven. I smiled to myself as I walked through the door, holding the big box in my arms, and stopped short at the sight of Gage occupying one of the oversized armchairs, working on a laptop, a stack of papers, and a mug on the side table to his left. Oh, I said stupidly, we're interrupting. We can go somewhere else.
Nonsense, said Amelia, settling in on the end of the couch closest to the fireplace, exactly where I'd sat the night before. We won't bother Gage.
A flush settled into my cheeks, and I looked at Gage. He was watching Amelia, a small smile playing over his lips. At the sight of that smile, my cheeks warmed another degree.
You won't bother me, Gage said.
I walked past him, not quite meeting his eyes, and said under my breath, Liar. He smiled but said nothing. I sat down in the middle of the couch, setting my box beside me on the opposite end from Amelia, where Gage had been sprawled out the night before. This put me right next to Amelia, and about as far as I could get from Gage unless I somehow talked Amelia into giving up her spot close to the fire. I wasn't ready to be around him yet. Everything had changed between us the night before, not just physically, though that would have been enough. He'd had his fingers inside me. I remembered the way I'd straddled his body, pushed myself back on those fingers, and ridden his hand to orgasm. My cheeks burned at the memory. I'd never done anything like that before. I'd felt lush and eager, open, willing to do anything if it meant he'd keep touching me. Sitting there in the library beside Amelia, carefully pouring birdseed into squares of white tulle and securing them with pretty ribbons, wearing my neatly pressed camp shirt, jeans, and white Converse sneakers, I was my normal buttoned-up self. Why did my normal buttoned-up self feel like a pair of shoes that were too small? There was safety in being proper and well-behaved. At least, I wanted to think there was. Having orgasms with Gage on the couch was not safe. It was definitely not proper and well-behaved.
I was not going to think about it while I was sitting next to Amelia. I tried to change my train of thought, suddenly worried that Amelia was secretly psychic and would figure out what was going through my head. If she looked closely, she'd see the flush in my cheeks. I needed to get myself together and forget that Gage was sitting on the other side of the room. He appeared to be ignoring us, focused on whatever he was doing on the laptop. Every once in a while, he would pick up some of the papers of the stack beside him and shuffle through them, find something he was looking for, nod to himself, and return the papers to the end table. I lost myself in wondering what he was working on, jumping a little when Amelia interrupted my thoughts.
"Tear off a piece of paper from this, about an inch square," Amelia said, handing me a notepad.
I tied off the ribbon on my bundled birdseed and set it aside in the box with the others before taking the notepad and doing as she asked. I tried to return both the pad and the square of paper, but she plucked the paper from my fingers and gestured for me to keep the pad.
"That's perfect. Thank you," she said.
I looked at her lap to see a single drinking straw balanced on her knees. Amelia's blue eyes sparkled as she crushed the square of paper into a ball, popped it into her mouth to get it wet, and then picked up the straw. Oh, no. Chapter 14. Sophie.
"Amelia Winters? You put that down right now," I hissed. "Put what down?"
she asked, sounding so innocent. I almost wanted to believe her, despite the straw she held in her hand and the spitball she was carefully plugging into one end.
"What? Are you in second grade? This is a low point, even for you," I said, exasperated. What was I supposed to do with a 78-year-old woman who thought spitballs were funny? "You vetoed everything I've come up with in the past week," Amelia said, annoyed.
She turned the straw in her fingers, making sure the spitball filled the end, not leaving any gaps for air to escape.
"You know why I vetoed them," I whispered.
I didn't want Gage to hear our conversation, since he'd been the reason I shot down Amelia's pranks. Remembering what he'd said the night we met, I refused to let her tape an air horn to Aiden's desk chair. Ditto for attaching one to the back of the door. Random air horns going off in the house were the last thing Gage needed. I'd also refused to sprinkle sprout seeds in Aiden's keyboard on the grounds it would likely get me fired, and had said I absolutely would not put a square of bouillon in Mrs. W.'s shower head so she'd end up bathing in chicken soup. That was just mean and gross.
"You're no fun,"
Amelia said, lifting the straw. "I know," I said. I wasn't fun. I'd never been the fun type. If you wanted someone to help you with your homework or show up on time to get you at the airport, that was me. I was reliable and loyal and honest, and I worked hard, but I'd never been particularly fun. I wasn't sure I knew how to be fun. As that depressing thought drifted through my mind, Amelia put the straw to her mouth and blew. Her spitball struck directly between my eyes. Of course Amelia would have excellent aim with spitballs. The spitball fell to my lap where I retrieved it and dropped it on the coffee table. I didn't bother to pretend to be annoyed. I wasn't mad. I was resigned. Anyway, I adored Amelia, spitballs and all. "If you apologize for that, I'll tear more pieces of paper for you, but only if you promise not to aim them at me."
"Deal. And I'm sorry,"
Amelia said, sounding genuinely contrite. I knew her too well. "No, you're not. But I appreciate the effort." I set aside my birdseed project and quickly tore a sheet of notepaper into a stack of 1-inch squares, handing them to Amelia. I scooted toward the other end of the couch, picking up my box of birdseed supplies and placing it between us. When she got caught, I wanted plausible deniability. Of all the things Amelia had proposed in the last week, spitballs were the most harmless. If I didn't let her get this out of her system, she'd stop asking for my help, and then